Saffron Planet, making sense of it all.
So, apparently, knife detectors are going to be handed out to everyone in schools to check that kids don't knife each other, because apparently 60,000 children between 11 and 16 carry knives regularly. What?
How many?
60,000.
Well, that'd be murder at lunchtime, wouldn't it? Because they'll be carrying knives.
That's true.
So when they eat in the canteen, they can't cut the food.
They have to use their fingers and just whack.
How would they butter their bread?
How can we get into such depth so quickly? I don't understand it.
I think this is what you call loosener.
A laxative.
Yeah.
Zeitgeist.
Right, Zeitgeist, the film Zeitgeist.
Yeah. I didn't see it.
Anybody's seen it?
I've seen it. Three out of five have seen it.
Yes. We can guess what it's about.
It's worth looking at it online, YouTube.
We'll do YouTube. Yeah.
I don't think it holds.
That is not to advertise.
It's not wise.
To those people who are...
I think it should be advertised as a piece of clever propaganda, but with the knowledge that it's, a lot of it is rubbish.
I say in propaganda.
Okay, yeah. To you people who don't know what we're talking about, Zeitgeist is a movie. It's been around for about a year on the internet. About a million people have actually seen it. And it purports to give the truth about certain aspects of society, namely Christianity, the truth behind 9/11, and the Federal Reserve Bank in America. It's presented in a way that it seems very authoritative in the way that it's presented and the professional nature of it. Very convincing, and it really sort of draws you in. And the 2 hours actually goes by very quickly because, in a way, in a negative way, it's quite interesting to watch.
It's very deep and meaningless.
Yeah, deep and meaningless. But presented in a way that it seems the opposite. That's the problem. Well, shallow and meaningful, yeah. But we see it as a danger because the first part of it is a complete demolishing of Christianity.
In such an absolute total way.
Yeah.
And it's... The way he is presented, everything he says is presented as fact, doesn't give you time even to think about it. It's just so fast, go on to the next one. And here's another reason why it's a load of rubbish. Here's another reason why Christianity...
It sounds a lot like the Michael Moore type things where it's so...
Yeah, it's very much like...
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm saying it with this sort of, ironic sort of attitude.
Yeah.
It's obviously
very
true.
Very popularist sort of style.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that really gave it away very early in the film, it showed you a Bible... on an American flag. So you can see that though it was demolishing Christianity, it was really America.
That was in the first segment.
Yeah. No. Right. So because American is supposed to be a Christian nation, if they can attack the roots of Christianity...
It's what they call it in old propaganda terms. It's called... what's it called? It's source derogation, they call it. Wow. And you actually derogate the source of something.
And then it just all collapses.
And that's it. So you're actually going to the heart and the beginning of something, demolishing that, and then that everything else collapses after it.
Mm. So anyway, any of you that see it, decide to watch it, just watch it with great discernment. And we're trying to put you off it, even though we've probably made it sound very interesting.
We shouldn't put anybody off watching it.
That's true, but you've got to watch it with discernment, because if you switch your brains off is what they want you to do, you can get sucked in, even if you've got a degree of discernment.
You can't just sit back and let it wash over you.
No, yeah,
Saffron Planet. Making sense of it all.
Baby Bible Bashers.
The other interesting documentary that none of us saw, but we all have an opinion about, is the Baby Bible Bashers thing on Channel 4.
Now, I haven't seen it.
We didn't see the documentary. Yeah. What we did... We've looked at the kids. And I spoke to people that have watched it, and the general vibe that seems to be going through it is that these kids have just sort of taken on what their parents do, and so that it's just reiterating it. But it's done with such a passion and conviction that it's sort of, at 10 years old, it's sort of surreal.
It's normal to them...
Mm.
Because they've just seen it
and
been brought up with it.
But they don't know anything better.
But there's no real spirit.
And it's like that documentary that we saw. There's a small town, or there used to be recently, a small town in America that was run by this chap called Michael that told everybody that he was Jesus Christ or the Messiah. Oh, and right. It was a whole little community that was following him, like every word that he was saying. He got all the young girls to share beds with him. Oh, and really...
That. Well, there's several like that.
Memory of that one, isn't
yeah. And he believed that the world was going to end.
That's
Michael
right.
On the 8th of February this year or something.
That wasn't the... No. You're talking about the
I'm talking about the children. Yeah. The Bible orders, but not children.
So this one was a guy, again, in a little village in America, and they let him film this documentary... and it was shown the day before he thought the world was going to end. He thought the world was going to end at one point, and they filmed it, and obviously it didn't end.
And they showed
but they had a little celebration.
During the midnight, when they were all walking along.
Yes. And
it was about to happen, and he was interviewing them, and nothing happened.
Mm. And then apparently he had an amazing second prophecy, as you do. Okay. First one, which was that the end of the world was going to happen the day after the actual documentary went out, which obviously, I'm glad to say, it didn't. Yeah. But no, and the weirdest bit was that he seemed to be using his power to get other people's wives.
Yeah.
Which was one of the key... Yeah. Which is when the alarm bells started going on for me.
It's personal dream,
so now you've... And when the guys were saying, how comes you're marrying our wives? He'd say, I'm just a prophet. Argue with God. It's him that's telling me all this.
Yeah. Because in the 80s, I think, some chap in America, a prophet... brought out a book saying why the world is going to end in 1987 or something. and we went through the year, and then obviously it never happened. And when we got to the 1st of January 1988, he produced another book that says why the world's going to end in 1988. The funny thing is, he must have been writing that second book in 1987. Yeah. So, people bought it, People, have a need to...
People like to believe in something, I guess. People some sort of deviation from their normal routine. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think those sort of books would sell in this country. We're far too cynical. But in America, it goes back to that those child thing about a certain degree of bringing people up into a very narrow view.
Yeah,
and just believing all sorts of rubbish.
Saying that about the whole cynical thing, if you go into any big major bookstores, the amount of magic and sort of witchcraft books. Yeah. Me and Steve went to there's the usual sort of odd
Harry Potter. Actually.
There's a load of there's
proliferation of
there's a load of
for teenagers and stuff. You know,
like teen witch and stuff.
Like magic stuff. Yeah. How to become a
What did we see? A big black book called The Big Book of Answers, and it was literally like an eight ball. It was a big description on the back of you should turn the book three times, like rub your hands on it, and it was literally just like, you open it up and it was just a page and it would say yes, or I don't know what it is.
You will find out in a week. But the best one was...
Your nose will fall off.
In the back of a magazine called... Oh, I can't remember what the name of the magazine was, but they had... you get usual mystic things. This was Mystic Dog, and apparently this dog had the power to tell people what their problems were. People were writing letters, Dear Mystic Dog, I don't know whether I should leave my husband. Yeah. And this woman said, Mystic Dog says no. It was great.
Yeah. So anyway, so going back to those kids, or that documentary that none of us saw... You know, I saw some reviews of it, and it's focused on the fathers, and everyone had a dodgy father. Yeah. And one of them, the kid, actually slept in the same bed as his dad, and had these dreams of Satan attacking him during the night. Oh, yeah.
It's surreal, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, the one argument that I heard put for it was that, David Beckham's son will be a good footballer and will be training from the age of five. Any chef, his son will be learning how to cook at five. Why shouldn't young kids be allowed to learn how to preach at five? But the difference is preaching. It's not a skill that you learn.
It's a physical skill.
And if you're a cook, when you go home at the end of the day, that's it. I mean, you can get on with your life. I mean, it's different. It's a whole lifestyle.
And it's child abuse, really. Those kids are really abused.
I think.
I bet you when they grow up, they all fall away.
Yeah.
I think teaching kids about faith. Is different and letting them answer questions to getting them to actively go out and be the preacher.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's because it's an unusual thing. Obviously, the parents are making money out of it, because it's very saleable.
It's a gimmick, isn't it?
One of them is called the Little Man of God.
Yeah.
They market him that with the T-shirts and everything and website, and the parents are making money out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to look at that side of things as well. So. Only the Americans.
Children were being exploited, and I felt that they had no real faith in the Lord at all. They were following the parents.
I thought they were probably hoping to get rich from that, but there wasn't really any real mention of Jesus and glorifying him.
Planet, making sense of it all.
Faith. Is religion just a distraction from the real truth, which is we're all going to die, it means nothing, we're all insignificant, we can't deal with that truth, so we make up religion to help us deal with not having life beyond our own. Religion does create a nice story for us all to believe in. We're all going to have eternal life. There'll be,
I don't think I.
Yeah.
No,
all right.
It's a good point. Though. No. It almost does sound too good, and because it does sound too good, that's half the problem with most people.
Yes.
There are people that, you know, it does sound so good, and therefore there has to be a catch because we do have this mentality.
Yeah.
Because in the world, in the world, that won't happen. In the world, you won't get things for free that are good.
It brings that to the root of a lot of cynicism is fear of gullibility.
Yeah.
Or
you don't want to seem naive.
Yeah. Or that sort of inbuilt little germ of pessimism. Oh, it can't be that good, really. No, there's always got to be a bad ending.
Yeah, it's too good to be true.
People think they have to sort of work for their sort of salvation or whatever, and you know, no such thing as a free lunch. There's always have to be a catch. They don't realise it's a free gift. And there has to be some, you know, some backstory
to it. But
you know.
Also, it's also not as complicated as that. Some people just like to be rational. And religion isn't really rational.
I mean, true religion, or true belief, faith, is above rationalism and deeper than rationalism.
Mm.
And that is something you have to get over as a, you know, as a believer or a faith. Rationalism is has its place in life.
It doesn't mean,
but it's not the boy all and end all of things. It definitely has a lot of use in a lot of life.
It doesn't mean that faith is irrational. I mean, apart from obviously the miraculous aspect,
it's not
of it.
Rational in terms of it just human existence. I mean, it's above and beyond. I mean, some of it is irrational. Compared to rationalism,
yeah. I mean, the whole gift of salvation is irrational.
Yes.
It's a miracle, just like the virgin birth. We say is a miracle, and lots of
you can't quantify it. You can't give arithmetic for it or mathematics.
Yeah,
there's
no science.
There is no science above and beyond science.
But taking away those particular core elements, you know, other aspects of the faith are rational. The life of Jesus and the flow of history throughout the Bible, whenever, you know, there is.
Yep.
You shouldn't. What I'm just saying is, you don't just switch your brain off.
Yes, there's earthly truths within there.
Yeah,
but fed from beyond.
Yeah, and that's why without faith, no one's ever going to get it.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
A lot of people, when they find God, it's at a stage when they're at their most weak or at their most
needing
something to believe in or needing some sort of comfort, which does make you think that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, but also sometimes the opposite is true. When people have got everything they wanted and realise there's an emptiness there.
Which is
the other way, in a sense.
No, it's not, because
it's like I've got everything in life that I thought was great.
Yeah.
that I always wanted, but there's still an emptiness.
Something else missing.
So it's not like I'm in terrible trouble and everything's going wrong, but it's like everything's gone right as far as my human view has
gone. But that's a personal... That's still a personal need. Some people are perfectly happy and they can do without religion.
Well, I think it's arriving at a personal need is part of the process. Is that arriving at a need, whether it's a need because you're in terrible trouble or because you've arrived at a point where you've got everything you thought was what you wanted and it's still empty. It's still a hollow feeling inside you.
I think sometimes you have to lose everything you've got to realise what you need, because you can be on the race to sort of pick up as much bits and pieces as you can and spend life looking for the next thing. And as I said, either you reach the point where you do have it all and you question why is having this all meaning anything, or you lose everything and you start to question actually whether you needed to find it in the first place. But sometimes you do have to be put in a difficult position or a very well-off position because without it... Without that barrier being taken away, you're not even going to come to the point. It's not about you having your human mind making a decision of, oh, I haven't got things, what to do. It's actually, in my opinion as a Christian, it's about having your perspective taken off what you think to be important.
And quite often at that point, is it your point where you actually say, I don't know how or what? And in essence, quite often God requires us to actually admit that we don't know the answer, and that we don't know how to get what we want.
And the thing that gets in the way there with a lot of people is pride.
That's right.
And quite often, reluctance to admit that,
or to arrive at that place and start working out a plan. How are you going to get out of it? Which we all do. How am I going to climb back up again, or how am I going to do something else that's making me feel good? But it's arriving at that and saying,
"I'm at the end of my tether.
I'm lost.
There's nothing more I can do."
And I think that's when, most people, in one way or another.
Yeah.
And in lots of different ways.
It's different for different people.
And it's not always that same instant thing with everybody either. No. Quite often it's a slow, some people it's a slow thing, some people it's an instant.
Well, some people have grown up through it, and some people come from Christian families and haven't known anything other. Right. That doesn't mean it's any less relevant.
I
do remember a turning point, where I knew that God was real and it wasn't just a Sunday morning and you were there for an hour and going through the ritual of the set prayers and everything. It became real.
Went to another search in Eastern religion, but I was disappointed with this as well. So I just believed it was this Holy Spirit who just convicted me. That they just say if I want to know Jesus more and something like that. And I said yes. I just felt that I have to say it. It was my decision. They didn't try to push me or something. But I just remember exactly this day, and I prayed with them, and I knew that that's what I want.
Saffron Planet, making sense of it all.
It's something I grew up with, but I would say that there are particular points where it started to filter in to me as a person. Does that make sense? You go along and you learn it and you understand it, but understanding and knowing, I think, in some ways are different things, especially when you're talking about a relationship with someone. You can learn, you can read a book about someone, you can find out where they went to school, what they've done, but until you actually meet them and speak to them and communicate with them, you don't know them. And I think it's the same with God, I'd been to church until I was, 14, 15. I'd heard the stories, I'd heard what he'd done, I'd heard the theories about how he'd done it. But until I asked for the Lord to sort of do things in my own life, until there was a dialogue where I was saying, help, or what's going on, or I'd see situations that I couldn't see having any good possible outcome, and the outcome would come about through, partially through dialogue, you sort of start to realise that you've got to get to know someone like God personally rather than through reading about it. And it's, and again, back to the Baby Bashers thing that we talked about earlier on, how much of that is they've learnt the style of the preacher, they've learnt the words. In fact, there was one particular guy who he used repetition a lot. He'd go, he'd use the repetition style that's quite popular in the Baptist movement in America. Yeah. And you could see that he learnt the ways that people had said it.
It was carbon
and the techniques.
Yeah.
And I think you reach a point where you know the techniques, but you have to actually get to know God as an individual.
Yeah.
And but it's a challenge because at the same time,
the thing is, you can't make yourself believe, and you can't pretend to believe when you don't. It's got to be, a penny dropping at some point, at some sort of, you know, you can't pretend to, or you can't do it because somebody else wants you to.
Yeah,
it's got to be an actual experience that sort of.
It's quite hard because you've got to step out the boat. You've got to put yourself in a vulnerable position, haven't you, by accepting something like that, going out in faith.
Some people will never get it. Some people in my family, right? I think of my dad. He's been to. He's now 82. So? He's been going to gospel meetings. He's been praying. He knows all the songs.
But I
think Pops is too rational to ever be in a position to believe.
I don't think
believe.
It's rationalism, because he hasn't got a rational background, but what he has got is a lot of pride. A lot of what I think Howard or Louis said earlier about wanting to do things your own way and not making yourself vulnerable.
Science and faith.
But for so many people, it is purely based on the fact that there's more evidence, physical evidence, against the existence of God than there is for.
I think science,
you know, we live in a world of science which is controlled by science.
Well, it's controlled by God, ultimately. I mean, it's bad science.
I don't know.
Science is not a
wrong science.
Is it?
I know, but if you...
Science is part of creation.
Yeah. If you're diagnosed with cancer... You can, science has come a long way, science can cure you of everything.
Yeah, I don't see science as being the opposite at all. I mean, it's part of the creation, but it's bad science and inaccurate science, which is the problem.
I mean, it's plenty of Christians who are scientists.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and
except for Christian scientists who are either Christian or scientists.
That's a case of rational mind.
Well, if you take the age of, like, the universe, or the supposed scientific age of the universe, it's one small fact that can sort of make religion a redundant sort of...
Well, as it's presented, yes. So, in terms of the age of the universe, what are we saying? I mean, who just...
Well, you can measure it with the existence of stars.
Yeah, so the existence of stars, how long the light takes to reach Earth. That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah.
But from my view, God can create the stars and the light here on Earth all at the same time. He doesn't have to take time to travel.
But why would he do that?
Because they were created for man on Earth.
I remember reading...
Why?
Various reasons.
But it actually said that they were created for signs in the sky.
But there are stars that we can't see. Why create them?
It's also microscopic.
Because we know that they're there, but we can't see them.
Because God has given us an inquiring mind, and he wants us to discover these things for ourselves.
We will see them when we've got better equipment.
Yeah.
I think
through his creative science to actually see them.
Saffron Planet, making sense of it all.
Why did God bother?
But isn't it a weird story? And isn't it?
It is.
It sounds like
very
a very
weird.
Human story. It could be almost be a Hollywood film. Why would God make things so?
You've got to think of God in terms of seeing everything in one go. He's not restricted to time and space as we are. We're walking through time, seeing things happen. God, if God looks at the whole of the creation and time as almost like a single map, and he knows what's everything's going on all the way through, we're experiencing it with our limited dimension of actually time and space. God's looking on the whole picture, and he sees what happens, he sees what's required, he sees the fall, he sees the...
Yeah, but it's all very weird, because on the
I'm not denying it's weird. On the very general level,
why would God even create an Earth? Because really, how many... There's like... Okay, so there's been a few billion people in history. There's like, let's say, I don't know, why did he bother to make the trouble of doing this? Because the world's going to end. So that'll be the end of that biblical story. Then it'll be...
He's creating a new heaven and a new earth.
With no...
With the fallen heaven and earth.
With nothing bad, nothing evil. It seems a bit of a boring thing to do.
It's not boring.
I think it probably would be.
If you lived in an environment where evil was part of your daily life, then you'd be dying for heaven.
But evil is everywhere, though.
But there is in a fallen world, which was, as a result of the rebellion of Lucifer, who became Satan.
My theory about why God bothered him.
The fall. God knew that would happen because he knew the imperfection of the beings he created.
My theory about why God ever bothered in the first place, that's the good question, which is why, if there was going to be lots of harm and upset for people, even though there was some good stuff, what was the point? Why didn't God just not do any of it and just be God and have angels?
Very selfish.
My theory is God is love, and God wants to love people and wants to have something to love. It's not that we're his toys. That makes sense. We're not here...
Because that's why he's given us free will. So we're not robots.
What he's done is, through love, he has given us an amazing opportunity, and he's made it as simple as he can, as it can be for him. And he wants us to know him, because actually, that, what we can get from that, the opportunities that can come through that, are amazing. But for us to have that option, we have to choose it. You know, I'm against forced marriages that you get in some other religions and some other cultures, because you don't choose to love that person. And similarly, God wanted us to choose to love him so that we could have a proper relationship, and that involved free will. But it all comes down to the fact that for God to love, he has to really have made something to love, and he wants to share love.
And he wants that love to be from the individual, not forced or part of a robotic creation.
And rather than life being a game, it's actually an opportunity that God gives through his love.
Yep.
And that's the reason behind
In our lives, we choose either to follow God or not to follow God. And God's really only interested in those who are interested in him. You know, if he was going to live eternally with his people, as what heaven is to be.
As much information.
And then it gives us the opportunity to join him.
Sounds like a really insecure sort of God, though, and a very selfish God. That he wants to create these people that would love him, I don't know about that. I mean, there's plenty of people that hate living and babies. The guy in the newspaper today that killed his own baby after, like, how many weeks? What about that little baby? And lots of things like that.
I have a personal assurance that baby is with God.
Yeah, that baby's not being judged.
But why? Because, okay, what about adults?
The baby wasn't old enough to have free will to create his own environment.
Okay, what about adults that do have free will but will never hear the gospel in Africa or on desert islands and, you know...
I think everybody will be given the chance to sometime. Yeah. Even if it's in their last moment, if Jesus speaks to them audibly before they die.
We don't know, see.
We don't know. We don't know but who doesn't.
All you've got to understand is that God is righteous. God is not setting rules. God wants everyone to be with him.
He doesn't give us all a chance.
But as Howard says, we don't understand.
Not equal.
We can't get into the head of every single
whatever
person.
Whatever that individual requires, he will give everybody their best shot for them personally to make the choice. If they ultimately choose not to go with him, then they'll walk away from him into outer darkness. They'll either walk towards his light by their own free will, or they'll turn their back on him and they're going to outer darkness.
So what about children
that grow up in Muslim society that are trained to be suicide bombers in their teens, and they go and kill themselves.
He will know.
At what point do they get given a chance to not only get a chance to hear the gospel, which would be impossible in their lifetime?
Well, all the original Christians, none of them heard the gospel.
Mm.
Because it hadn't been written down yet.
Mm.
So all they had was the Old Testament. But, I mean...
But they lived it. They knew what the cards were on the table. They could see what was being offered.
Mm.
But a lot of people don't get to see or see it so late in their lives, so they can't really make a decision.
That's according to our view. That's according to our limited human view. But I know that he's a very merciful God.
Mm.
And that he will give everybody the chance
that's the
to
hope.
Choose.
That's the
well, that no, I,
that's the basic
God, the God
human
I believe
need
in,
to have a righteous.
But the God I believe in, that's in the Bible. It is the most merciful God,
but
he doesn't force people to love him, because you can't force people to love you, and he can't force people to follow you. And I mean, I know my mother, just before she died.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I became back from California, you know. Christian, I found all books ripped up and all sorts of things. I bought a watch from a Mexican shop. I remember that it was like black face, and every on the hour Jesus would appear in it. That disappeared. I don't know what happened to that. I loved that. The real bit of Christian kitsch. But before she died, she said, "I want what you want. I want what you've got." And I know that was enough for her. It wasn't like she didn't hear the gospel. She wasn't given a deep understanding of the theology or the arguments. She just knew, ultimately, I want what you want. And that gives me great hope that she's got that she's where she is.
Yeah.
Only because of that one thing. She didn't quite know what it was, even.
Yeah.
So
but the desire to want that... I think is honoured by God,
and you don't know what people do on their deathbed.
No one knows. I can tell you lots of people I know have gone to heaven, but I can't tell anybody that's definitely gone that hasn't.
But people that don't necessarily understand that the Bible says that the only way to heaven is through the acceptance of Jesus Christ as Saviour, people that don't necessarily understand that technicality on their deathbed.
Well, that's how it is. Jesus could appear to them.
Yeah, he could appear to them and speak
and
to them.
And then they'll know.
He's seen Jesus.
He did it to Paul, the apostle.
Yeah.
But there's a bit in the Bible where it says, because I remember a Christian asked me...
Different way. Everybody I know that's become a Christian has come to it differently.
I know.
I don't know any two people that have become Christians the same way.
Yeah.
But I just imagine there's like a house in like Iran at this point, exactly the same conversations happening, but with Islam.
Well, I'll tell you what, though.
The same argument.
I'll tell you what, though. They're real Christians in Iran, and they have a very tough time.
Yeah.
They've had experiences like us.
How much of our parents and that influence can affect what we believe, and how much, how aware do we have to be when we watch things?
I think things that can go both ways.
I know, talking about
Bill Hicks, the American comedian.
Yeah.
Virulent, very quite an intelligent bloke, but virulent anti-Christian. His parents are very strong Christians.
Yeah.
So what happened there, who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
At our church.
So it's not necessarily...
Yeah.
At the
doesn't
church,
follow.
At the church that we did youth group at, there were more Christians with non-Christian parents than there were Christians with Christian parents. The ones with the Christian parents pretty much ran away.
Well, I think of how many Christian leaders I've known, personally, in our church, in our old church, whose kids have gone away. Maybe they'll come back, you know,
but
a lot of it is rebelling against, I think, when you're a minister, you tend to ignore your family a lot. I think,
absolutely. And fair enough, I mean,
but your mum.
I became a Christian, my parents weren't. I rebelled against them.
I was first, and then my mum followed me, and then my sister. So, you know.
Started off a trend.
Well, it stopped there, because my dad, you know, as I said, 20 years, most celebrated atheist in the world, I think.
I was brought up in a Christian home, but I found Christ on my own.
Yeah.
But what interested me, they were both Christians, but we never spoke about Christianity in the home. And the only time we had prayers was if the vicar came. And my sister said the first time, well, we never have grace, why are we having it today? And my mum was furious.
I wasn't brought up in a Christian home, and my dad was very anti-church, really, because he'd been made to go when he was young, three times a day. But that was sort of a generational thing, wasn't it? You know, respectability. People used to go to churches. My mum always went quite frequently to the parish church, but like
she didn't take you there.
She didn't take me, no.
Saffron Planet, making sense of it all.
I would believe if
we are. I mean, in our world, it's just getting, it's accelerating so much that, you know, lack of real worth in society, other than what we had,
worth.
You know. Oh, worth, yeah. But, you know,
real worth.
You know, without the anchor that we have, although I'm just speaking personally, I don't know how people can, when they see the news and when they witness what's happening in the world, how, without that anchor to sort of give them the assurance, you know, I find it very difficult to make sense of it, you know.
Yeah. It's getting worse and worse. Religion does make life more meaningful.
Not religion.
No, it's faith. It's obviously faith. Religion is man-made, written down to something. I don't call it religion either, because I think religion is something that's almost like a book of ideas, but it's about faith. And it does come from the outside. You can't drum up faith.
No.
It's something that you let yourself open to, and God comes
Simon,
and
gives it to you. You just need a unique...
Don't preach to me.
No,
don't you dare.
I'll stand on this chair a minute.
you a unique and personal.
Yeah, but entirely yours. Yeah,
I've had that. Yeah. I had it throughout my teens. You always said that you thought that I would be the spiritual one and everything.
You'll probably come through again, and you'll probably really show us a lot of things that we haven't got a clue about.
Don't want to hear that, do
I? I can probably tell you things now that you don't have a clue about.
you're probably right.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
No, I've got arguments, but...
You've got to have your own thoughts. It's not a matter of being indoctrinated
because,
by the people.
The arguments that you have now will be shared by a lot of people listening to this, and it's worth you
voicing them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, leave you on one note, because this is something that has troubled me for ages. I think I've told you a couple of times. It's something that I've read, I can't even remember where I've read it, but it got me thinking. All the miracles that we read about in the Bible, everything that God has done according to the Bible, yet you'll never read, and I've checked this out and done research, you'll never read of any point in the world today where God has healed an amputee, or, you know, where God has actually physically given somebody the miracle of healing someone. No matter how many people pray, you will never see an amputee being healed, but you will hear of stories that God has healed other things that aren't visible.
But is there anywhere in the Bible where an amputee is suddenly grown an arm? I don't think there is in the Bible either, is there?
No, but there's the Red Sea parted, and that doesn't happen.
So is this a real stumbling block for you then? Yeah?
Is this
If I was to see amputee being healed, then I'd probably believe in God.
Well, I tell you, a lot of people saw miracles and have seen miracles, and they still don't believe.
I've heard of people that
they're
apparently
just stupid, aren't they?
Well, no, because I think that's just a trick.
You just knew about these big rallies, you know, what's his name, the bloke in Africa, probably his name there, Reinhard Bonnke and Moise Cirillo and all that, where they claim that, you know, legs have sort of been put back in straight and then gold teeth have appeared. And physical manifestations, but I must admit, I've never actually seen any myself. No. I've never even seen evidence on the television.
You'll never see a YouTube video, a genuine video where that sort of thing happens.
But if you did, you'd think it'd been faked.
I know someone that had...
Yes, probably so it wouldn't be evidence. Yeah, okay. It wouldn't be considered evidence.
I know someone that had...
Yeah, only if it happened to you, could it be evidence.
That's
where personal experience is what's required.
And this is where, also, it ties in with what we read in the media. If a miracle was displayed in the media as
thousands of people saw this miracle. If we read it in a newspaper, right, would we believe it?
No, even, because it, I, because cynical. Most of the media has no credibility anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I know someone that had, I do know someone that had ovarian cancer one day and didn't the next, and all that had happened was that she had prayer about it. Whether that's, but some people will listen to this and say, oh, yeah, well, that's just luck.
Yeah,
some people will say, oh, well, it's power of the mind. But yeah. I don't know anyone. I know lots of people that have thought positively through, you know, disease and haven't lived through it. I don't think we can say that positive minds necessarily create miraculous healings. I don't think that.
No, but it has in the past. I mean, the body can heal itself. That's a scientific fact. Mm. Body can heal itself of so many things.
Well, it is. It is a healable thing.
Yeah. And some people would put that down to it being a miracle. But it's also a medical point where the body can heal.
Well, that's it. That's why it has to be a personal experience. So it's quite often all this evidence doesn't necessarily. Some people might catch on to something, or they may know someone really well that, you know.
Yeah.
And they've seen it happen and go, oh, and it's a miracle.
That's it. It's not the
way a lot of people. Although a lot of people it seems to be in Africa and Asia. There's lots of mass healings and things happen more often. It seems to be in a lot of meetings. Those kinds.
Because they have
a mindset that actually can accept things a bit easier like that, and we're very cynical in the West.
So would you say that God targets people based on their
ability, their individual ability,
ability to understand how he would work and do it.
That's why we've all had individual experiences of becoming Christians. None of us can say, oh, we all did this and on this and it happened like this. We're all different because God deals with the individual.
Yeah, but sometimes we all have different needs, something that will produce...
Or different things that can help our understanding.
Like in my mum's case, when I became a believer and when I finally broke it to her, I just said to her, and, you know, it must be the only time in my whole life I've had a word of knowledge, as I said, pray to God for a miracle and it will happen within a week. And I said that to her, and she prayed about something, and it did happen, and it was something really unusual, but it was enough to push her through.
Right.
Yeah. And she's been a believer ever since. And that was the right thing for her at that time. And obviously, for Simon, it seems that he needs to see a physical manifestation as a thing. Well, because if it's just stamp for somebody...
But that's not us talking superior to in any way. It's not us saying, hey, we're great and you're not great yet, but you will be. Because it's not like that. It isn't like that at all. It's not superiority.
Yeah.
It's just we've had an experience that we know has taken us deep and totally and permanently into a place.
But I've had equal experiences.
I'm sure you will.
I'm
sure that those experiences eventually will be part of a chain of events.
Yeah. No, but I've had experiences like that without praying, because it was the whole story with Philip having
foot verrucas
and overnight having prayed about it dropped off. But the thing that I didn't say, because I was almost scared, but a few years later, I was in exactly the same position, didn't tell anybody, my verrucas fell off the next day. Yeah. I didn't pray about it. Okay. And so how could one be God's work and one be just the body? Yeah.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's
so
true.
It makes me wonder, that wasn't actually a miracle.
Maybe it is.
That was the only time we ever prayed for it.
That night, I mean,
I mean, yours happening was a natural thing.
The problem that I've got it.
But you can't
equate
the two together.
You bring up that story a lot around people.
I've missed it for ages.
The several
you mentioned
things.
It a couple of weeks ago to Chris Hill.
There are people that
the same things can happen to several different people. And sometimes it can be a miracle. Sometimes it can be a natural healing. Sometimes it can be, you know, you can have the same event for different reasons, which is sometimes a miracle, sometimes it's natural. So it's not saying that every time that happens it's a miracle, but maybe that particular time it was.
Yeah.
And with your particular time, perhaps it wasn't.
You're looking at it too logically, you know, I think.
This is where the rational can get in the way sometimes. Yeah. You know, it's not to say one shouldn't be rational about certain things, but, you know, when it
have thousands of baby preachers running around.
It's that old Christian cliche, that let go and let God.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right, that's it.
And that's for that. That'll do for now.
Very late, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you got to go there, Steve. Oh, yes, you got to go. Maria will kill all of us.
His wife is not the person you want to mess with.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just about to unclip myself.
Saffron.
Apparently, at one point, they used to sell Smarties in, like, their own colours. You could have a pack of green Smarties, a pack of red Smarties.
Do you know, that's really fascinating.
Not as fascinating as, apparently, this is a great fact, you all know it, but it's an amazing fact, that Hitler bombed the Golden Syrup Factory 68 times during the Second World War. 68 bombs, that's what, probably about £68,000 gone on trying to destroy the Golden Syrup Factory.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Obviously the backbone of the Allied advance.
Saffron Planet was brought to you by Howard and Louis Wirth, Stephen Simon Maltz, special guest Steve Ward. Also featuring the voices of Monica Maltz, Lillian Kemp, Jenny Harris and Kasia Hodurek. Any comments or suggestions to steve@saltshakers.com. Audio engineering by Steve Jeffrey and Phil Maltz. Editing by Steve Maltz. Thank you, goodbye, see you again next time. Why did God bother?